This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided with the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help, seek out a qualified medical services provider or other healthcare professional. Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast, a podcast dedicated to discovering and sharing all the ways in which yoga can be lived off the mat. Real stories by real people, just like you.
Welcome to the Live Your Yoga Podcast. My name's Joanna, and today I am co-hosting with the lovely Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. And today we're going to be joined by a returning podcast guest, Gilbert, who some of you will already be very familiar with because he's either marked your practicum or you've taken one of his online classes or student development sessions, or maybe you've even been on a teacher training with Gilbert because he did his 200 and his 300 hour teacher training with the school when we were in person. And so we're having Gilbert back on the podcast today because we want to talk to him about building a career as a yoga teacher. So first and foremost, we're going to welcome Gilbert to the podcast. And maybe, Gilbert, you could just start by telling our listeners a little bit more, or just reminding them about all the teacher trainings that you've done, and maybe give our listeners an indication as to how long you've been teaching for.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's such a pleasure to, it's always a pleasure to do stuff and just be able to get caught up with you guys. So I did the 200 hour training, and that was in December of 2015. And we did that in Bali, and then did a 300 hour April of 2017. And then that was back in Bali. And then after the 300 hour training, I started teaching, and I've been teaching since 2017, since that summer, that spring. And at first it was, like in apartment complexes and stuff like that, and a nonprofit. So a lot of stuff just kind of in the community. And I'd taught like that for maybe 9 months before moving into a studio kind of setting. And then I've been teaching pretty much in studios, since like 2018, got a handful around, Nashville for a while, like pre-COVID. I was at 6 different studios. And then with COVID, I kind of used that kind of slow down as a way to kind of consolidate my schedule. A few of the studios I was at, unfortunately, had closed. And so now I'm currently at 3 different studios and then still a nonprofit in Nashville. And then since then, just started doing more like leading teacher trainings for a studio, started offering like retreats, started offering just different like workshops, and different things. Different things like that around the city, which has been real nice.
You kind of pre-answered my next question. The next question we have, which was how, like, what does teaching currently look like for you? And so, to add on to that, are you content with your current teaching schedule, or are you looking to increase that or to decrease it?
Yeah, so I'm currently like pretty content with my schedule. Thanks for a while. We're getting a little more hectic because I was doing, on top of my regular teaching load, I was doing a 200 hour teacher training that kind of took out some of my free time. And so the way my schedule's set up right now, I have 12 regular classes a week. They're pretty much all hot and power classes. I have Mondays off and pretty much every other Friday. It would be nice, like, if I could rearrange my schedule, I would have like 2 days off in a row. Cause I just think that's so important. And when I first started teaching, when I was at like 6 different studios, I was teaching upwards of 18 like classes a week. And that was kind of, it was, you're just like so in it that there was not really like a time to like pause. And it was just like, all right, I got to keep going, like next class, next class, next class, and like sleep, wake up, next class. And I was driving like all around town. And so COVID provided kind of like that nice little slow down where it's just like, oh man, like I can't keep. I think the first year was like 760 classes that I taught, like teaching full time. And then it wasn't really, I didn't really have like a day off. It was pretty much, I could have a class at like 6 a.m., a couple like maybe during the day, 8:30 p.m., the next day start again at 6 in the morning. So, I mean, the good thing about it was just I was able to get a lot of experience real quick. I got to see and be a part of so many different yoga communities in Nashville, which I'm very like grateful for. But it did get to the point where I was like, all right, like this just isn't sustainable to, I can't physically teach that many classes. And so cutting it back down to 12 has been real great. Usually I've got a couple of days a week where I teach three classes in a day. And usually I get them like, there'll be two that are kind of like blocked together. And then one, maybe like in the afternoon or two in the morning, one in the afternoon or two in the afternoon, one in the morning. So that part's kind of like nice, because it, yeah, just blocks my day off real nicely where there ideally is time to be able to like take care of other things. And so teaching has really just kind of changed into, I guess, just being able to have like more conversations with people, like less so asana focused and the things I really am more into. So like mindfulness and just meditation and like a lot of self-love kind of things. And so one workshop that I've started offering that I've done a few different times now is kind of like the yamas and niyamas with the foundation of like self-love. So just tying into how do you implement these things in your life without being so hard on yourself, without being so critical, and providing yourself that same kind of like unconditional love that you might be, that might be easier to like show other people. And especially when things get difficult. And even I talk about it kind of in like my practice too. It's like, just notice the words that you're using. And is it like a compassionate, are you being like gracious? Like, do you really need a break right now kind of thing? And so what's been cool now being involved in the community here for 6 years now is just kind of seeing the growth in students where it's also, they're looking for more beyond like, you know, an arm balance workshop. Like those are always going to be kind of popular because a lot of people get into yoga and for them, it's like either a workout or kind of like more asana focused, but it's nice to see kind of that evolution of like, I want to learn more about meditation. Like what are the yamas and niyamas? Like let's talk about the chakras. So then that's been nice to be able to offer these workshops for the things I'm more passionate about. And then getting to do like teacher trainings now where it's like, yeah, you just get to have those in-depth conversations with people, and share like how this is much more of a practice, beyond just like on your mat and doing poses. So yeah, just being able to like cut back on teaching as many like classes to be able to focus on those other things has been real, real nice too.
Was that a conscious decision you made based on factors like your body, like how hard it can be sometimes to teach 12 vinyasa, or, you know, just the physicality that's involved in teaching, or did it just happen organically?
A little bit of like, of both. So also a thing that happened that kind of propelled me more into like trainings or workshops and trying to offer more was, I mean, rent. I moved from an apartment where I was like able to, I was finally at like a comfortable spot to like save money again. And it was like, oh, cause I just been like grinding and it was just like paycheck to paycheck. And then moved into a house, which has been like a godsend just to have like this much more space. And I didn't realize how like confined I felt, but my rent went up like $1,000 a month. And it was like, okay, like I can't just be teaching like 12 classes a week. And that's where at least like doing the practicum stuff, like that was a nice kind of like supplement to where it's like, okay, cool. Like instead of teaching 18 classes, I can do 12 and then I can take care of like a few practicums like during the week. And then that still gave me the space to, all right, you've been thinking about different workshops that you want to offer. Now you've got the time to kind of start pulling material together or start like brainstorming the different things that, that you want to offer. And then also kind of just worked out to like studios would be like, hey, are you interested in, like, do you want to lead any workshops? And then I was kind of like, oh yeah, I could lead a workshop. Like, so they kind of, anytime, it's been nice. Anytime I've kind of been like ready for something, the opportunity from a studio has also been like, hey, do you want to do this thing? And it's like, oh yeah, like I am ready for that. Like I could do that. Or we're going to do a teacher training. Are you interested in taking that on? Whereas before I would have been like, I probably could have done it, but I would have been a little more of imposter syndrome where like the last couple of years, it's like, okay, like, no, I know what I'm doing. Like I can definitely get people up to that point to share like how to teach a class, like what's really going on, and talk a little deeper about the different aspects of what goes into teaching.
Mm-hmm. Love that. I love that evolution for you.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's been so like, the nice thing about it is it's been very, very natural. Like, fortunately, I haven't had to like actively seek out too many of these, like make things happen on my own. And it's nice to be able to get kind of like an experience with the studio, just because it's a lot more low risk when it's kind of like the studio's wanting you to put it on and you kind of got like their support, as opposed to, I'm going to just go off and try this thing and see how it works out. Where with like finally starting to get into like retreats was just kind of an interesting thing. Cause then it goes into like, you got to promote yourself, you got to sell the thing. And it's like all this other stuff where I'm not good with like the back end sort of thing, like the business things, like putting it all together, like figuring out like the budget or like putting together a website. And it's like all those little things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to do any of that. And it's, but it's a good learning experience to start dipping your toes into like that.
Totally. It kind of leads us nicely onto what we really want to get into in this conversation, which is all the different creative ways that you can be a yoga teacher. You know, it doesn't have to be teaching 18 public classes a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might start that way. And for many of us, it does start that way because you're so excited, you have so much to offer, you're giddy, you need to pay your rent. Mm-hmm. So you're saying yes to every teaching opportunity that comes along. But then as the years unfold, you start to figure out who you are, what you like to teach, who your community is, and you gain more confidence. You then, like you said, are able to branch out into other areas of teaching yoga that really light you up and serve you. So I'd love for us to kind of go down that path a little further, and maybe, you know, you could highlight some of the creative ways that you can show up as a yoga teacher without necessarily having to be teaching publicly. And maybe me and Mark can also share some ideas that we've tried and are maybe still doing or have tried and failed at that we also want to share with our listeners. So maybe you can start, Gilbert, with things that you've either tried or that you've seen other people try and have worked for them.
Yeah. I mean, just like the physical practice when you're getting into it, I mean, a lot of it is just kind of a lot of trial and error. And you just gotta, I guess one thing that I tell students a lot going through the teacher training is it's the nice thing about it is it is so open-ended. It's like, once you get your certification, it's like, you can really take it anywhere you want. And so if someone's really great with social media, it's like, that can be a huge thing because you can reach so many people. If you're creative, you can like put the videos together or whatever. And like, that's not necessarily like my strength. But some people are like really great at it. And it's like, they just dive head into, all right, I'm going to start putting like little tutorials on Instagram or TikTok or whatever and build my following like that way. Or if you're into like the chakras or like the yamas, niyamas, or more of the philosophy, pranayama, and it's like, cool, because you can just kind of like hone in on what it is that excites you. And then kind of just like figuring out the different ways that you can apply it, whether that's either a studio, if you teach at a studio, like offering a workshop through them, or if you don't teach at a studio, like maybe just renting out the space, because it's like, you know, that community is going to be interested in potentially like some breath work or meditation practices. Or if you do like sound bath kind of stuff, then it's like you have those outlets. And the biggest thing is give yourself the chance to really explore all of it and see the different, whether styles that you like, heated, unheated, you know, like something that's more rigid, like an Iyengar or a Hot 26 or Ashtanga, or something that's a little more flexible, like just a Vinyasa or like a Hatha class, where it's like a little more, I want to say like intuitive, at least the way I teach it is a little more like intuitive, where it's more of like, all right, what's really going on in your body, as opposed to it has to be this way. It has to be this way. It has to be this way. Where some people, like, that's what they're drawn to, is like kind of, it has to be done a certain way. And for me, I've never liked that. I like structure, but I don't like being told exactly like what to do. And so for me, it's nice because, yeah, I practice at a bunch of different studios, heated studios, unheated studios. And I like to be able to kind of just like pull the different inspirations from like different teachers, like, oh, that cue is great, or this transition, or like that movement, or this pose I never tried doing. And then just finding the different ways I can incorporate it, whether that's in a class, or whether that's like diving more into workshops. And it's always just a gamble on yourself as well. Or it's like, all right, I'm interested in this thing. Let's see what happens. And, you know, and it could be a dud. Like, you could spend a bunch of time trying to put this workshop together, and it's like one person signs up, or like maybe no one signs up. And with that, it's just more like, try not to get too discouraged. I mean, even if you're a teacher, like, sometimes no one shows up, and sometimes you've got kind of like a full room. And, but how can you still show up kind of in like the same way if it is just like that one person? And anytime you get an opportunity to teach, it's like you're getting an opportunity, not just to teach it, but also to like learn more about it, and an opportunity to get like feedback from someone. I was like, did this work? Did this not work? Like, what could have been done differently? What would you have like liked? So some different things, I guess, that I've tried. It's kind of a physical, a more asana based workshop where I'll do like a small group thing. So let's say it's like 4 to 6 people, and everyone kind of comes in and they're like, I want to learn, let's say, crow pose, or I've got really tight like hamstrings, or my hips are really tight, or just everyone kind of gives me the different things that they want to work towards. And then we'll kind of, as a small group, I'll put a flow together for us. And then we'll kind of like touch on all the different aspects. So it's not just like, here's how you work towards the things that you're like aspiring to do, or here's how you can like focus more on these different areas in your bodies. And then that one's been nice because it is a small group, so it's a lot less like pressure. And I usually do that as kind of like a package where it's like, for 4 weeks this month, like, we'll get together for like 90 minutes and we can like, you'll get a lot more like one-on-one attention. Something like that is one that I've offered quite a bit. One is, a more reflective workshop where it's kind of taking a regular class, but breaking it down to make it more intentional. So let's say there'll be a vigorous like section of Sun A's and Sun B's, and we'll just kind of like move through it quickly, and then we'll like pause, and it's like, okay, so what thoughts came up when you're just trying to keep up, or it feels like things are going fast? Like, were you aware of the words you were using or what you were feeling in your body? And then we'd go into a second portion where it's like holding poses, maybe a little longer, like a chair pose or a plank or something, where it's going to build heat. And it's like, okay, now that it's getting a little more difficult again, what are you thinking? What words are coming up? How can you like stay in it without necessarily like quitting? Can you like modify so that way you can like stay in it? And then having a little discussion after that, like what came up. And then the third portion would be more a yin thing where it's like, now we're holding postures just longer, where it's a little more like passive. And as that gets uncomfortable, now it's like, why is it difficult being still? Like, what different thoughts are coming up now? And then so that way, and then asking people kind of the questions, it's like, well, when do you recognize this off of your mat? You know, like in your life when things are getting super busy and you feel like you're just surviving, like, how do you handle that? And then, so just trying to really get people like, okay, this is really like a practice that I can take off of my mat. And then the other one that I've been doing quite a bit is, like I mentioned, the yamas and niyamas, and just a deeper discussion on like what those mean. And then with the foundation of self-love, and helping people just kind of get more focused on eliminating distractions. And so that way they can be like truer to themselves. And so those are the things that I try to like incorporate that I've been a little more focused on. And then, and then trying, retreats and stuff now. And then with retreats, it's been another thing. You never know like how many people are going to sign up. Like my first retreat, like I didn't really like make any money. But it was a good experience. Like, people had a great time, and it's like, now I kind of know what to do, leading into the next one. And hopefully the next one will be ideally like more profitable, you know? but it was good to at least get that experience, like out of the way. But what about you guys? What have you found, I guess, the different things that you're trying to also incorporate, or to minimize like having to necessarily teach so many classes?
Mark, do you want to go first, or?
Sure.
I can go.
Yeah. I found, because I don't teach that many classes anymore, but when I was in those bulk years, I was teaching, you know, between 15 and 20 a week. Mm-hmm. One thing that really was helpful was private yoga classes that came my way, because I usually ended up charging more, and they would just, mm-hmm. you know, there's one person, like private one-on-one. And I found, although it is different, it was way easier than holding space for like 30 people. Yeah. And they were regular, and that was great. Also, looking for different spaces to teach yoga was just kind of refreshing. So I was teaching at a resort that was close by, and I would do meditation classes there and more like relaxation practices, and teaching at a physiotherapy clinic. So just sort of finding a lot of different spaces that had a different dynamic. It's not easy, because then you really are going all over the place. So it's not for everybody, but I found that some of those were my most enjoyable classes, because working in a clinic setting, it just had a totally different vibe, and same for the resort. And then I think the only other thing that I sort of did when I was back teaching many classes was just sort of see what the community wanted, like what the people coming to my classes, and then create workshops based on my people who were sort of in my vicinity, what they wanted. And that was always a lot easier than trying to do something that was kind of a little bit out of my wheelhouse. And Joe and I talked a lot on many of these podcasts about sort of finding your groove in the yoga world in terms of teaching. And yeah, like you said before, Gilbert, like the physicality that I had at the beginning changed over time, and I ended up teaching more meditation classes and just different styles of yoga. So that's kind of how I navigated that part.
And when you were doing like privates, were you promoting privates quite a bit, or was it just kind of like you would take the opportunities as they presented themselves?
You know, it was very odd. It was one student who I was friends with, was moving on. And so I got that student. And then from that student, two or three other students also wanted private. It was just sort of, and it's like you're saying, sometimes the opportunities just come your way at the right time. And I had wanted to do this type of yoga, and they were people who were, some of them, severely ill with cancer or just with these massive chronic health conditions. And for me as a teacher, it really felt like, oh man, I'm making a difference, and I'm able to connect so deeply, and we, you know, became friends and would have dinner together and all these things. So it developed just through word of mouth, but it was just getting that one, and then boom, from there.
Yeah.
Cause I know private yoga, you know, we always say it's a great thing to offer, but it's tough to find those people. So,
yeah. With privates, I mean, as like you were mentioning, like as worthwhile as it can be, cause you can charge more. And for me, I've never like pushed it too much. If a student asks me about it, then it's like, that's when I'll kind of like entertain that. And it's mostly been because my schedule is like so full, where it's like, if I'm going to offer a private, it's usually like either going to be on a day that I'm off, or a day where I'm already teaching like two or three classes, just so that way I can like save my day off. And so, and that is something that I consider now. It's like, well, do I drop a class to kind of open up more space to maybe try taking on more private clients? Especially like the house that I moved in, I've got like a little yoga room set up, but I haven't. Yeah, it's just hard with already like such a full schedule. Like, oh man, do I really want to take on like another class? But yeah.
I mean, these three people lived in the same block. and I would book them one after the other. So, I mean, from a financial perspective, it was a dream.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, 3 hours of my time, but I got three classes in within those.
Yep.
You know, I would leave 5 minutes, like 10:55 to the next one. I'm gone. I'm like, and they knew that. So yeah, it was, maybe I was just, it was a very fortunate situation that just happened to pop for me at that moment in time. But, it was really helpful in terms of just thinking outside of the studio box a little bit.
And another question, like, how did you feel? So I'm assuming with the resort, was there just a lot of like, you would have students like one time, or was there a lot of returning kind of like people?
I never saw anybody more than once. And yeah. It was also great in a way because I was being paid to be there regardless mm-hmm. of who showed up. And some Sunday mornings, nobody came. Yeah. And like sometimes people come, sometimes they wouldn't. Yeah. And everybody was coming to the classes with a different energy because they were there to relax. They were there for fun most of the time. Yeah. So it was, again, like a really great opportunity for me, and kind of interesting to never see the same people again, because I could teach basically. I taught the same class so many times, but it was so easy for me just to keep the same class plan because I'm not going to see anybody again. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
Yeah, I have tried lots of things. Yeah, so it's obviously started with the public classes and then branched into some workshops at the spaces I was teaching at. Same things you all mentioned, so I won't repeat any of that. And then I have now kind of just whittled down to just teaching in one studio space, and that's down to many reasons. One being that I find that studios are not necessarily that sustainable. A lot of studios don't last the course. And especially COVID showed that, you know, it was awful that so many spaces shut down. And yeah, I've worked in spaces that haven't made it. And so I didn't want to just rely on teaching in yoga studios if it was my sole income. So then I started to teach in like recreation centers because they're a lot more reliable, I think, long term. So I have some classes there still. And then I also that branched into teaching out of retirement homes in the same area. Again, that is super, super reliable work and it pays really well, more than I would get in a yoga studio. So those were kind of, that's kind of where I'm at now with public teaching. And I'm probably at about 10 classes a week now, which seems like a good sustainable amount for me. And during the pandemic, I started to branch into online teaching, which many of us did too. But I was fortunate to be able to create some online programs that are now on a platform that you can access and people can purchase these courses. And so now that's become like a very small passive income stream for me. Because yeah, I have two courses. I have a yin course and I have a chair yoga course, and they're, you know, some students will ask me if I'm taking a break for the holidays, I'll be like, oh, such a shame. I'm not going to be able to practice with you. Do you have anything online? And now I can say yes and send them that way. And then they've got access to all these classes. So that's been great. But that's kind of what you were saying, Gilbert. If you don't have the space in your week to start planning an online program, filming an online program, uploading an online program, like you stay on the hamster wheel of your week in, week out, with no space to try other things or add other things to your plate because you have so much else going on and not no more energy to give out to those things. So the reason I was able to do those programs was because the pandemic hit and all my public classes kind of fell by the wayside. So that moment in time was very key for that, because it's funny, now we're back to more normality. I haven't been able to add any more to that, to the online platform, because I just don't feel like I have the capacity to do that right now, because the I feel like my plate is fuller again. But that is another creative way for teachers to be teachers without necessarily being in a public space.
Yeah. And I think that's such like a good thing too, because I mean, it does get to a point where it's like, yeah, you can only teach so many classes. So what are some other ways that you can like generate some sort of income without physically teaching or without needing to be somewhere? And it, because it does get hard where if you are teaching full time, like you're not getting paid if you're not in a classroom. There's no like benefits. You're not getting like vacation time. And it's like maybe you're swapping your classes out with someone else, but then it's like the week you get back, you've got five more classes or whatever it is like on your schedule. And it's like, oh man, it's just, and it does get hard. And that's where I haven't gone like that same route, but it is something that's just on the back of my mind. If I was like, let's just once a month or something, like maybe recording a class and like just having that like library, and then maybe starting a subscription thing where it's like, at least hopefully if you could get people to do it, that's at least like some money coming in where I'm not having to teach a class. Cause that is something too, that I think about quite a bit, where it's, if I ever wanted to like leave Nashville, and if I'm not, if I don't have another job or any other income, it's like, it's going to take a while to move somewhere. And if I'm just teaching, like to get the amount of classes that I need in a new city, and who's to say that they're going to pay me as much as like the studios pay me where I'm at here. And even here, there's like a big discrepancy of like what I make from studio to studio. And it does take a while to like build your network if you want to start doing like privates and stuff like that. So it's just, yeah, it's just interesting, like navigating it. And I find it difficult. So I've always been much more of a people pleaser. So it's easier to like do it for a studio, doing it for someone else, as opposed to, oh, I want to do this for myself. And this is something that I think would be interesting. Because it's easier to put my things on the back burner. And then it's like, focus on everyone. And it takes a very conscious effort to be like, Gilbert Pot, like, what is it that you really want? And how do you want it to like, yeah, how do you want it to like look, or what is it that you want to, yeah, how do you want to spend your time kind of thing?
A good segue into what would be the one piece of advice you would give to a yoga teacher who's looking to branch out a little bit, to think outside of the many, many, many classes a week mentality?
I think a good way to do it would be if you really just wanted to, I guess I know some people who just really double down on smaller group classes. So instead of maybe teaching so much, like I said, I've got a little space here, and I do know some teachers where they'll just do maybe once a week, a small group, 4 to 6 people. And it's like a handstand workshop, but they just get like more one-on-one attention. So it's like, that's a weekly thing that they do, and people are paying anywhere from like $50 to $75 for a 90-minute session. And then if they get like 4 or 5 people, it's like, yeah, that's like 5 classes, you know, or more, depending on what people are like making. And so for them, it's like, oh man, yeah, that's a good thing. And that's why I would do like my progression series every once in a while. But the fact that they've made it just more of a reoccurring thing, or just having those different workshops that you can like put in rotation, where it's like, all right, another one that I offer is like a sequencing workshop, because I've found a lot of power studios teach a set sequence, and they only teach the postures from that sequence. So students are like learning how to cue and all that, which is great, but they're just not learning how to like deviate or create their own thing. And then, so that's where a sequencing workshop was like clutch, where it's like, all right, cool. I teach at studios where all they teach is a set sequence. I can offer this thing, and they'll at least be like usually around like 10, 12 people. It's kind of like the sweet spot for a number of people that I enjoy. Another thing would be just really trying to hone in on maybe some corporate sort of things, or Nashville there's a lot of like bachelorette parties kind of thing where you can either go to like their Airbnb and you can put something on like an Airbnb experience, or else there's like little companies where they kind of like get contacted and you can just like work for them and they'll be like, hey, we've got a bachelorette party at this place if you want to go teach a class. Or other people too, that'll just do like meet up at the park and it'll be a donation base kind of thing. And some teachers will make like $5, $10. And then other times people are like super generous and they made like $300 off of like one class, you know? So it's just a matter of like what you want to make it.
What about you, Joe?
Advice for teachers who want to try other areas of teaching. It's tricky because my advice would be make space in your schedule, like make space in your calendar for opportunities. But I know that's not necessarily financially possible for people. So, you know, depending on your circumstance, maybe you have a partner who you could have that conversation with to say, look, I'm going to drop a class a week because I want to film a class. It's not going to make me money right now, but it's something I really want to do. And I feel like potentially down the road, it could be financially viable. So, or I want to start offering privates, but I don't have a client yet, but I just want to make the space for that. So, you know, with that being said, that means we're going to have less income coming in for this next couple of months. Like, is that okay? Type thing. Have you got me, basically? Can you cover that additional cost? Mm-hmm. Or if, you know, if you're a single person and your yoga career is your career, then do the calculations and figure out, like, you know, what do I need to make? Is there anything I could let go of at this point to make space for something else? Or is it a case of like adding something to your plate right now, just for a little while, in order to get you to that next stage where you see yourself? You know, maybe you do have to teach that online class at 8 p.m. on a Friday night just to get it recorded and start to build your library. And you do that for a few months until, you know, before you know it, you've got a nice catalog of like 12 plus classes. Mm-hmm. So I think my advice would be make space, or make whatever it is you want next to become more of a priority for you. Like, value it as much as you value going to the studio and making $50 to teach that class. You know, put in as much effort into the next thing you want to reach as to the thing you're currently doing.
That's it. And I think just like you said, the hardest thing is like making that space where it's like, all right, like I can think clearly, like I can really focus on the direction that I want to go. Because yeah, when you are caught up in it, it is hard to step away from a minute. And it's always interesting, because as much as like I preach as a teacher, where it's like, rest when you can, like maybe Savasana is the only time you're going to rest throughout your day. Like, make the most out of your time here to be still and like not have to worry about anything, and just give yourself this break. And it's like, and then I find myself, it's just like, go, 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 go. And it's like, Gilbert, you know how important it is. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's funny, because that really takes us to the next question, which is about balance. And how, you know, we've talked about kind of the rat race. We've talked about the hustle. We've talked about filling up our plates. So, you know, how do we, as mini business owners, which is what we are as yoga teachers, you might not realize that when you start, but as it unfolds, you soon realize you're your own little mini business. So how do you find balance with that? And also, you know, having a healthy lifestyle, or is it just a continuous work in progress? And maybe there's no real answer to this question.
For the balance, I mean, I do need a healthy balance. Like, I'm the kind of person where too much time alone is bad. Too much time with people is bad. I need equal time, like small group. Hey, let's get together. Equal time. This is just me by myself in my house, not doing anything. And it is hard when picking up classes or subbing or just something where, as much as I like fight routine, I find that I need it. And it is just very, just beneficial, because it's like one weekend going away and it takes me like a month and a half to get back into my groove and my routine. And then by then it's like, everything's just like all over the place and haywire. And I'm not good about practicing. Like, that's one of the first things, that on a good week, I might practice like three times, but I practice like once in the last like couple weeks. Ugh. And then when my parents were here, I didn't practice like at all. My struggle is like putting myself first and like really listening, setting aside the time and space to do that. And usually if I'm just on my regular schedule, it's nice, because with the 12 classes a week, it does give me that break in between things where it's like, all right, I'm not overextending myself in any one area. And for me, sometimes it's even just like getting away, which is like hard because that means I'm not like making money, but to just do like a weekend of not doing anything, or a day, giving myself my one day off of, all right, everything's, it's a matter of, for me, using my time wisely. So that way, when I do have my day off like that, where it's like, all right, I really don't have anything I need to do. Like, I can go for a hike. I can go for a drive to a waterfall, or just like something that's really gonna fill my cup. But sometimes I'm just like so tired throughout it where I'm just like, all I want to do is like nap. I don't want to talk to anyone. And it's like, I know if I nap right now, it's just like, I'm putting things off, but right now I have like, I don't have the energy to like do it. And all I can think about is like sleeping. I struggle with the balance quite a bit. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I mean, it's tricky for, I don't mean that just for you. I think it's a work in progress for all of us who are teachers to find balance in our work and creating a healthy lifestyle. And, you know, me and Mark have talked about this quite a lot too on the podcast, of how that looks, how your own practice looks as your career evolves as a teacher. There is no right or wrong answers, and everyone's balance looks very different. So I guess I'm searching for it. I'm searching for the answer so that I can tick the box and be like, okay, you know, I'm doing that, or I'm not doing that, or I can work towards that, because I don't think I have figured it out myself. Yeah. I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, listening to ourselves, listening to our intuition, being okay with saying no. Yeah. We need to say no.
And that's huge. I struggle with that a lot.
Doing the things that you preach in class.
Yeah.
Doing the things that you're telling your students are really going to be replenishing for them and nourishing for them and ground their central nervous system. Like, are you also doing those things? Mm-hmm. Mark?
I mean, you know, I don't think there's anything such thing as balance for me, and it's constantly shifting and changing. But one thing that I noticed that was a helpful change in terms of balance was that just really being kind to myself and understanding that those periods of what we're going to talk about next, it's like this podcast was planned out because it's just sliding in there. But when I do experience burnout or overwhelm or extreme tiredness, just accepting that that's part of the process and not feeling like a failure or like, I can't do this. It's like, okay, this is a momentary period in my life. I'm going to figure this out, move through it, and then get back to doing whatever it's going to look like next. Because I found to begin with, I would, you know, be down on myself a lot. Like, why can't I teach this many classes? It looks like everybody else is just, you know, they look like Sesame Street characters out there with endless energy and just like, I'm like, yeah, like Gilbert said, like, I just want to nap.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
So yeah, I can, I, and you know, I'm, I'm getting up there in age, very slowly, but getting up there. And it's like, it's still happening, burnout and things like this. So yeah, just, I guess, acceptance of the fact that life is ever changing and nothing is constant. And I'd love to know, Gilbert, have you experienced burnout as a yoga teacher?
I have. So there's been like two really definitive times. And the first was I think it was in like 2019, started teaching in 2017, but it was just like a few classes here and there. I never went into teaching thinking it was going to be a career, or let alone like teaching full time. It was just kind of, the ball got rolling and like opportunities kept coming. And like you said, it was just like, yes, 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 saying yes to like everything. And in 2019, I taught like right around 770 classes. And I just remember like teaching that. And at the end of the year, I think it was like 2020, like getting ready to like pay taxes and stuff like that. And I saw finally like how much money I really made. And I was like, this is like, how am I surviving right now? Like, I can't physically teach like more classes than I'm currently doing. But I like loved it. And I was like, all right, so then it was just more of like, how can I be smarter about it? And that was a blessing kind of with the COVID thing, was my schedule got consolidated. And like I said, after COVID, I was able to like kind of chunk my schedule with the places where I still taught. So it was no longer like 6 a.m, 8:30 at night, and a couple classes like throughout the day, like 4 days a week type thing. And so then that was great. And just providing like that space. And thankfully, like I got a couple like pay bumps at different studios. So that kind of alleviated a lot of like that stress. And then the other time was just more so like recently, where did a retreat, got back from the retreat, and it was right into a teacher training for a studio. And one of the days that we were meeting for teacher training took one of my days off away, because we would be meeting. And so I just didn't have the regular breaks that I had scheduled in my, and I knew it was going to be like this. I knew it was going to be like that from September through pretty much like Thanksgiving. And then my parents came, but it was just like a couple days off here and there for like the month of, or for the 3 months, September through November, where I was just like, I just need more than like one day off. Like I need some time, but there's just always like something coming up, or something I had to do. And I was like, Gilbert, you just gotta stick with it. Just keep going. You know, your break's going to come. But then it was like the break would come and there was like more things that needed to be done. And it was like the first time where I just got to a point where I was considering like, what am I going to do next? Like, what's going to be a job that, what even like kind of job am I going to like look for? Something that's going to be a little more stable, something that's going to provide like benefits or like vacation time. And I knew that I just needed to like rest. And like, I got sick. Like I was so like burnt out, and that caused me to like, I had to stub out my classes for like 3 days while my parents were here. We all got sick together. But that slowdown was just like what I needed. Like I was just like running on fumes for so long that my body just finally was like, no, you need to rest. So boom, sick, no moving or not doing anything for pretty much a week. And so since that like forced slowdown, I was able to like get caught up on all the other things that I felt like behind on, and like start planning like future things. And I was like, okay, like I'm back to like my normal like headspace, and I'm back to like my regular teaching schedule. And it's like, okay, I've got breathing room again. And the hard thing, like we were just talking about, is learning when to say no. And when, and for me, I struggle a lot with, it's like, I can like sub my class out. I don't need to like, thankfully I'm in a place where it's like, I can, if I need to sub classes out to rest, I can do that. I don't need to like make up for it like the next week. I mean, it would probably be better, but I don't necessarily like have to. Like I'll pick up subs as they come up without feeling that obligation of, oh crap, like I'm going to be short. Like I can't do this, like that space where I was operating at for a very long time. So it is good to be in that area, but it is hard for me to say yes to myself. Like, you do need a break. You can take a day off. You can rest when you need to rest. And I just need to give myself more permission and grace to do that, especially when I know that burnout is coming. It's like, I can feel it. It's like, oh crap. I know. And it's like a freight train that's just like out of control. And I'm like, Gilbert, you can get off. You can get out. You can take a break right now. But yeah.
It's hindsight though, too. Now you've got the experience and the knowledge and of what that is, what that looks like. I think when you first experienced burnout, I know for myself, I didn't know what it was. Like, I didn't really connect the dots. I just was like, I'm just exhausted. Like, this just must be normal. So I think once you've been through that process once and come out the other side, I think when it starts to appear again, you see the signs quicker maybe, and you can start to implement things to avoid you getting to that place of like complete sickness or, but again, that's just something that comes with experience. And I think if you're a new teacher and you're listening to this and you're hearing us talk about burnout and like being exhausted, you might not have any concept or understanding of what that is and be very confused as to why on earth we would be burnt out as teachers, because this practice is so beautiful and nourishing and everything else. But it's almost just kind of like a warning sign for those new teachers, just to be careful and to keep looking after yourself. And yeah, like you said, like, listen to your body, know that it's okay to say no, don't, you know, throw yourself in full pelt into this, because it might not be sustainable. Yeah.
And I mean, even this year, I think I'll teach just over 600 classes for like the year. And I mean, I'm still teaching like quite a bit, but at least, like I was saying, the schedule's like spread out enough to where it's like, when I'm not taking on extra things, it's like, it's good. But I just got to be very conscientious of like doing the things I need to take care of myself.
Yeah, totally. Can I ask you, like, obviously we've just kind of gone into the shadow side of yoga again, talking about burnout and all of that. But I was just curious, because I'm curious to hear from teachers who've been teaching for a similar amount of time to me, what have been some of your biggest challenges? Maybe we've already talked about those as a yoga teacher, and what have been some of your biggest highlights since you've been a teacher?
Like, the challenges for me has been, unfortunately, like just the financial side of things. Like that I mean, everything's just getting, unfortunately, more and more expensive. And that part of it just gets like frustrated. And even as much as we like talk about it in a teacher training, it's like, you're not doing this for the money, but it's also like, oh man, but I'm doing it enough to where I wish it was easier to be more sustainable, to like live a life where it's like, yeah, it would be great to be able to like take a vacation. And like not have it be me leading a retreat where it's like, yeah, I'm in a beautiful place, but I'm working the whole time. I'm teaching as much on a retreat as I would if I was like just back home. It's just in a different like setting, you know? So I think that is like the biggest challenge, because, and also like, I feel people who teach, go into teaching yoga also, it's like, we care about people and we care about ourselves. And if we would do it for like free, you know? And a lot of times it like starts like that, but it's like, you, especially when it becomes like your job and like your career, where it's like, you do need to take care of yourself. You do need to like maybe charge a little bit more for something to make it sustainable for you to even like keep going, to keep doing it. And I really struggled a lot with, whether for a while there, just the imposter syndrome, like, am I ready to lead a retreat or a workshop? Or even a teacher training, and does what I have to say have any like merit, you know, like, what do I really know? And I think even then, what we get to do is like, it's not necessarily that we have the answers, but we just have tools and we have questions. And then it's up to everyone to kind of like listen to themselves. And that's all we're doing, is we're just trying to like get people to do that for themselves. And so I would say the highlight, I mean, I've had some like very incredible like teaching experiences. Like Nashville does a International Day of Yoga at a park, and one of the nonprofit that I teach for, and it draws like a couple hundred people. And so I got to like be one of the teachers like during that thing. And it was cool because it was like a free event, and it was students that I've got to teach. It always feels like a reunion, like doing stuff for them, where it was like students I've taught when I first started teaching to students who I've taught at like the different studios around town. They all got to like practice together, and it was cool to see all them together because that like never happens. And I think as a teacher, it's nice once you establish like your community, and then you see people's like their growth and their practice. And even at a studio where it's like maybe someone's hiding in the back of the room, and then all of a sudden they move like more towards the middle, or maybe they're like up front now, and then they're practicing like alongside you, or they go from like not even wanting to say anything to like wanting to chat your ear off. And then it's just, and it's cool to see like them embracing it and just like their confidence evolve and like what they're capable of doing, from someone who's like, I could never touch my toes, to it's like, oh, now their palms are like under their feet and their like legs are straight, or when they get crow pose or an arm balance for like the first time. And just seeing people in like those moments of like growth and those moments of realization of like, yeah, of what's possible if you just like show up with intention. And like, if you do the little things that you're supposed to do. And like now, so it's cool seeing that. And like now getting to do like teacher trainings or the retreat or more workshops where it is more like conversation and dialogue based. And you just get to know people on a different level. And for me, it's always been about connecting with people. So it's nice to be able to like see that. And in a teacher training, just seeing like someone, and I mean, and you guys have like led those or been a part of them too. So it's cool to see people like so nervous, or, oh, I can never like teach a class. And then by the end of it, it's like, they're kind of like conducting the room and like seeing like them come into like their own, like find their voice and all that kind of stuff. It's just special to be a part of people's, all about part of people's like journey. And ideally we're a positive, like, impact, like holding that space for people to just kind of like see what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's beautiful. What are you currently working on? What projects do you have on the go? What projects do you have coming up? And how would people find out about those?
So currently putting together a second retreat, and this will be down in Costa Rica, the 25th of August through the 1st of August. That's going to be in Tierra de Sueños.
First of September? 25th yes. of August to the 1st of September?
Yes. Yep. Okay. And yeah, so it'll be at the same place where I was at last year. So it's kind of nice that the logistics and stuff, I kind of already got that figured out. So that's going to make this one a little easier. And just kind of like a reset, reconnection. Like, I really want to use it as a space for people to just kind of set things aside for this week and really do what they need to take care of themselves. Yoga classes, like some different meditation stuff. If they need to just go hang out at the beach the whole time, like that's going to be available to them. Just a make your own kind of thing. And really, other than that, like that's, I guess, the big thing. Now that the teacher training's done, it's kind of more just wrapping up this year and fine tuning just the different like workshops that I've already like offered, and then figuring out when I'll start offering those again at like the different spaces. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And really, like, Instagram is where I post most of my stuff. And then that's just Gils Picks, GILSPICS. If people want to connect on there, that's where I usually like post most of my stuff.
We'll link that too in the description so people can find you. Yeah.
How was the retreat at your Yoga Flow offered? The space looked great. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. It was such a nice center. It was, I think, the first time I taught an in-person yoga class in years, only online. So yeah, I had a great time. It was just nice to get away. And, you know, also we're not running it ourselves individually. So there's always a sense of doing your part and then being able to relax a little bit into it and let the others do theirs. So that was really nice. It was a multiple teacher retreat. So yeah, it was wonderful.
Cool. And also just getting to connect with so many people from like the community that we only get to interact with so much like online. And so just to put that like face-to-face component of it it's just special and it's huge.
It really was. Totally. And that we really felt that like the people that came really were the right people that came, and they were very appreciative to finally be together with each other and with us teachers that they've practiced with online. And maybe they know us quite well from that, but we've never seen their faces, and, you know, we only know them by name. So it was very, very sweet and very special. And we're doing another one in Portugal in April. So I think that's going to be leaning a little more towards our like European students and our UK student base, I think, because it's a little closer for them. But you never know, we might see. I think we have got a few students from the US coming to that one too. Whereas this one in Canada obviously was a little more, it was definitely Canadians and US students that were partaking. But yeah, that the connection piece is huge, and it's why we do what we do, I think, at the core of it. So it's been so lovely to hear you share all of your thoughts on your journey, Gilbert, and how you've navigated your teaching career to this point. We love to ask at the end of every podcast a big question, which is how are you currently living your yoga?
Oh, how am I currently living my yoga? You know, this past year, it's really like less like on the mat stuff and more mindfulness and just being more intentional, like just learning to really like take care of myself well. Little things from like trying to cook more meals, I'm bad about keeping like the fridge full. So it's like I'll buy groceries and I'll eat good for like a week and a half until like I've eaten everything. And then I'll go weeks without going back to the grocery store. And then during that time, I'm just like eating fast food. And it's just like, what can I just eat quick to like sustain me, as opposed to let's just go to the grocery store and like restock. So little things like that, where fixing up things like around the house or just doing the things that I get, just being more intentional with how I'm doing different things, whether it's time that I'm spending with people, how I'm taking care of myself and trying to value that, because I still struggle with the things that I know are good for keeping food in the fridge, cooking like my own meals, even like going to take a yoga class. Like, yes, rest is like great, but it's also like, all right, Gilbert, you've been like on the couch for days. Like, go take a yoga class, go for a walk. Like, you know, that's going to be good for you. And then it's like, that's enough to just like get the ball rolling, where it's like, oh yeah, this does feel good. Like, okay, like I need to do this. Like, why does it take so much effort to do the little thing that I know is going to give me more energy type stuff? And so a lot of like trial and error there, but being very gracious to myself, being more recognizing my patterns a lot more. And so that way it's like, all right, this thing's coming. If I keep doing this, let's like try to stop that, as opposed to like letting it like burn out, letting it get to like that point where it's just like, oh my God, I'm just like stuck in a haze of depression and just like lethargy and just like, I can't do anything. Like, I can't think about anything else. I'm just like, I think learning to do the things that I need to for myself. Granted, this was like a bad example just because I did reach burnout, but I also knew that it was a busy time of year. I knew that was coming. taking care of myself is in.
Well, this has been great. Thank you for sharing all of your beautiful wisdom and insights, Gilbert. You always have so much to share with our students. So thank you for your time. I know your time is precious. So thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
And thank you, Mark, for co-hosting with me, my partner in crime.
Yeah, so good to hear you. It's to hear you guys, to see you guys, to catch up. Thank you for having me. And to those of you listening, thank you so much for listening.